Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests. Ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. My name is Karen Watts, also known as Karen at PetOfTheDay.com, and we have with us, of course, the real host, Joe Barber, Country Joe.
Right. Here I am, ready to go.
Excellent.
And today we have Mike Owens, right?
Yes. Mike.
Yeah.
Our first guest today, and his website is Boxes for Birds, but he is really here to talk about the birds dearest to his heart, nearest and dearest, which is pigeons.
That's something different, huh, Mike?
Yeah, I guess so. For a lot of people in the U.S., there's not a lot of knowledge known throughout the U.S., but other countries in Europe and throughout the world, they have become probably the number two hobby.
Wow.
I would say right behind the dogs. Yep, the shows are worldwide, all over the world now. We have pigeon shows. We have pigeon racing going all over the world. It's very active. And, in fact, I just got back from Germany and went to the largest livestock show that they've ever had in Leipzig, Germany, over 225,000 entries.
Jeez.
And that was all types of poultry and farm animals, pets, pigeons, chickens, ducks, you name it, they were there. And a lot of them I've never seen before. It was really an experience of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like Joe would be.
Now, what kind of... Yes, I would. Right in heaven over there, right, Karen? Boy, that sounds like a lot of fun. Tell us about the pigeons you raise. What kind of pigeons do you have? Do you have racing pigeons and show
pigeons?
Yes,
I have several breeds of performing birds. That's the racing pigeons, and then you have your roller pigeons and tumbler pigeons. Roller pigeons roll backward somersaults. They still don't know why for sure, but they have found information that goes way back, thousands of years ago, that that Persian kings would bet on their falcons that it could catch the other Persian king's roller pigeon.
Wow.
And in one case, they have it on the back of a goat skin, and it's quite old. And it says that the one king is betting 100 stallions that the other man's falcon cannot catch his pigeon. And the escape is a backward somersault.
Isn't that
and
amazing?
That's just one of the neat things about those. Racing pigeons have become, you know, fantastic all over the world. They're just like they're the thoroughbreds of the sky. They've up to over $100,000 for a single pigeon in some cases.
$100,000 for a pigeon. Wow.
Yes.
How far do they fly? Do they race? How long are the races for pigeons?
Races here in the U.S. run anywhere from 150 usually to 600-mile races. All the countries overseas in Europe, they'll go up to 1,000-mile races. And the birds can fly roughly 600 miles in a day's time. They call those day birds. They'll make it in one day. They stop usually along the way and get a drink. Average speed, 60 to 75 miles an hour.
Wow.
So this isn't like a track and field where they do a 50-yard flight and a 100-yard flight. This is all over the course of miles or many, many meters?
Yes, all done in miles. It's really it's done in yards per second. And that's kind of an unusual way of doing it. It's how many feet per second they travel. And they like to say, then they calculate that down to the miles per hour. And some of them, fastest bird last year was over 95 miles an hour throughout the whole 600-mile race.
Boy, that's amazing. Boy, I just can't get over the price. $100,000 for a pigeon.
Oh yeah, yeah. Most of your racing homers are in the thousands of dollars for good quality, and they're all pedigreed. Go clear back to the imports that come in from Belgium, and most of them come in Belgium, England, and surrounding countries around there are real big into the racing sport. They'll have races with over 250,000 entries. And that's a lot of birds to let go at one time.
The Queen of England is also a
pigeon fancier, and she has a racing loft. And this has gone back over 300 years that the castle there has had and kept racing homers. In fact, one of the oldest means of communication is the pigeon. Bringing messages from one place to another.
Correct. Yeah. Uh huh. Now tell me about the purse fees. What could you win with a $100,000 pigeon? In a race, in a big race.
The largest prize race right now is in South Africa. It's $1 million race. So that's a pretty good chunk of money to be able to win in the top. If anywhere in the top 100 birds, it's going to pay very well. Entry fees run anywhere from $1,000 to even up to maybe even $2,500 for entry fee for a bird.
Now,
you never know. Guys that have just a few birds win, and sometimes the guys with lots of birds win. It's just you just never know.
Do the birds really make it interesting for a lot of people? How do they identify them?
Pardon me?
Do the birds wear like little leg tags or little flags or something?
All the bands are recorded. When they get ready for a race, the bands have a microchip in them, and when they come across the landing board to go into the loft, it automatically goes to a computer and calculates their time, and it sends out the message throughout all the club members and owners. And it's just like in a few seconds, everybody knows who's won.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, because they bring across, sometimes there's as many as three birds coming across at once, and they're down to the 1/100,000th of a second to make sure they can say who was really the very first bird.
Gosh.
That's amazing.
It's an amazing sport. It really is. It's growing, and we're really proud to be part of it. The fancy pigeons, which there's right now, in the last probably 20 years, we have found throughout the searching around the world over 2,000 breeds of pigeons.
Some of them go back
over 7,000 years, back to Christ time, and they've been the symbol of peace throughout the world.
Wow.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know. City people tend to think of pigeons as, sort of pests and don't know that the official name for a pigeon is a rock dove anyway.
Yeah. That is the truth, yes. And a rock dove looks just like a wild pigeon you'd see on a railroad track or on a building.
Yeah.
They come from all parts of Europe. They were brought over here by the early settlers, brought them over because that was one of the main forms of food for people in Europe. They had what they call dove cotes, large structures built to house the pigeons in there, and they free flew and they foraged for themselves. They didn't have to feed them. They went out and found their own grain and feed. They do not eat insects. They only eat grain. And when they came back, they would raise their babies, and they harvested the youngsters, and that's called squabs. And they're a delicacy most throughout all over the world. Here in the U.S., there's not a big demand for them. There used to be back in the earlier part of the 19th century, we had a lot of squab farms, but there's very few, if any, left now.
Well, I am going to cut you off right there. Gentlemen, we are out of time for this segment.
Wow.
We'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show, talking about pigeons with Mike Owen.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goose Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be Healthy Goo, healthy.
Your pet may be sick and not even know it. Your pet may appear healthy, but a vast majority of healthy-looking pets are actually infected with parasites and other infections that do not manifest themselves until they overwhelm the pet and the pet finally appears sick. Sometimes, by then, it is too late. To find out more about how you can help your pet to stay healthy, then go to www.quantumvetcare.com. That's www.quantumvetcare.com. www.quantumvetcare.com.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show, and Joe and I are talking with Mike Owen about pigeons. You know, Mike, one of the things you were just talking about, people using pigeons for food and squab. And I noticed, I watch some Food Network television shows. That's what I do my workout to. And I've noticed that more and more squab is becoming more popular in restaurants around.
Phone calls from people that are looking for squabbing type breeds. They're usually bigger and they're more productive. And truth is, I'll be honest, I've never eaten a pigeon. So I couldn't tell you. It's like chicken.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've never eaten one either, and I've never eaten a guinea pig. You know, it's all cultural. Depends on where you're from and what you like to eat.
Uh-huh. Yep. Many of my friends that are in Europe, that's what they do with all their birds that they don't sell. They make a pigeon pie that's like a casserole. And they rave about it. And I just say, well, that's great. Good. I think I'll pass.
Wow.
But anyway, I know it's like dove. You know, it's a dark meat, and it is very, very nutritious. I was speaking to you about the dove cotes, these buildings that they had all through Europe. This was a way that the kings in the different areas collected taxes. They collected the manure out of these dove coats. You know, when a person had a property, a large piece of property, they were, it was, the government came in and made them build to the specs of what they wanted for to capture the manure. The manure back in the 1700s was sold on sailing ships all over the world as the number one fertilizer until they found bat guano.
Wow.
And then that's when bat guano became really, really famous, and the dove coats kind of went to the side. But really, that was their taxes. So the people were raising the birds, and the king's people would come and collect the manure and sell it, and that's how they, took their taxes. And I wish they'd do that here, too.
Yeah, I guess. Now, Mike, tell us how people can get a hold of some of your pigeons. How would people get a hold of you?
You can mainly by the phone, and I advertise in probably about a dozen different magazines. We have several pigeon magazines and that are here in the U.S. We have That would be really the easiest way. My phone, should I give you my phone number?
Sure, if you want to, of course.
Yeah, it's 501-329-2377. And what I do is I collect all the information I can from all breeders all over the U.S., and if somebody calls for an unusual or rare breed, I've got a list where I can go through it and help people find what they're looking for. So anybody that wants to call, I'd be glad to help them any way we can. I sell postal shipping boxes for live birds, same telephone number. It's called Boxes for Birds, and there's a website, www.boxesforbirds.com. And you can order boxes, online, or you can call. We'll be glad to help people in any way that with questions or helping them find birds or anything that would come up. We have many shows scattered all over the U.S. We have the National Pigeon Show that'll be the Grand National is in Oklahoma City in January this year. We have the National Young Bird Show, and it's in Louisville, Kentucky, in the last weekend of October. And then they're scattered throughout all the major cities. Usually there's clubs that have, small shows and some very large ones. The Pageant of Pigeons is a great show that's in California every year. It'll have thousands and thousands of pigeons there, and there's a lot of people there that would help people, if they had questions or if they were interested in getting birds.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you mentioned was there was a Young Pigeons show. And one of the things that I learned as a child was that people don't see, quote unquote, baby pigeons among the wild pigeons because they grow up so quickly. And
yes.
So, they appear, by the time you see them, they look almost like they're grown up parents. How long do pigeons live? A racing pigeon or a show pigeon?
The average is around 10 to 12 years. Some have lived as much as 30 years.
Wow. That's really old.
Yep, and it's amazing what their abilities are at a really young age. I was mentioning to you before about the young bird that we had that had never flown before, never been out of its. It was just raised and just at the age of learning to fly, and it flew 350 miles. We let it go in Oklahoma City, and it followed us home, not even knowing anything about flying at all, and made the trip. And when we arrived in at home, there he was on top of our truck. And I don't think he rode on top of the truck. He
That's
definitely
amazing.
Flew.
That's
we were sailing along about 70 miles an hour, so I'm sure he was doing all he could to keep up. But how neat that a young bird without any training, without any, has that kind of ability.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
This is some little unknown facts about pigeons. Pigeons have the largest brain and the largest heart of any animal.
And you mentioned that, we've only got 3 minutes left here on this segment, but you mentioned that pigeons were even used during the world wars to carry messages from
absolutely.
Troops
there's
in various
so many
parts
stories
of the field.
There's great books, and in fact, we'll have the opening of the, it's called The World of Wings. It's the Pigeon Museum in Oklahoma City. It will be opening sometime this following year. They just got the new building built. It's taken 20 years to finally get it off the ground. They got the new building in, and now they're getting contributions from all over the world, people bringing artifacts and old stuff and information about the pigeons, the story of the pigeon. But pigeon has saved more lives than any other animal in history. In Europe, the award is called the Dickens Award, and it's given only to animals, and it's an amazing a feat for an animal to save thousands of soldiers' lives. And there's so many incidences in American pigeons that were over there during the First World War and the Second World War that they were used, and those birds, some of them, injured, walking in with the message and saving thousands of American soldiers and Allied soldiers.
Wow,
some amazing stories. There really is. There's a great book on it that it's just so heart-filled. Every paratrooper that jumped out of a plane had a pigeon in his strapped on his side all during the First and Second World War. People, little known facts about them, but there is a lot of information out there if people are interested in looking.
And this whole thing has reminded me because, of course, I've never met a pet pigeon or a racing pigeon, but when my dad worked at a power plant there were hawks that moved in to one of the smokestacks, and all the pigeons around their company, which was Norton Company in Worcester, all the surviving pigeons learned to fly really fast and really low to the ground because they were smart enough to figure out if they were flying 6 inches above the ground, the hawk couldn't catch them because he'd crash.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, the pigeon is one of it and the hummingbird are the only two birds that can hover and fly straight up and straight down.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and the dove coats were made that way so that any one of the of a hawk that came in, it never could get out. There was no way to get out. It died inside because there's no water inside those dove coats. And hawks and owls and none of those birds are able to do that. Pigeons, the male sits during the day, the female sits during the night. They make a pigeon milk inside their chest, and that's what they feed the baby pigeon.
Wow. And I'm going to have to cut you off. We are out of time. Mike, we'll have to have you back again sometime here on Chicken Joe's Chicken Show. We'll be right back with more.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. We now have on as our guest Craig Russell from the Society for the Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. Did I get that right, Craig?
There you go.
You did. Joe knows. He's one of our members.
Yeah. Hey, how's that doing? That must be doing pretty good. I see you run a big ad in Backyard Poultry now.
Yeah.
Magazine. Have we taken in a lot of new members since that?
Well, I think so. I talked to Chuck. Well, I've talked to him since, but I talked to him about a week ago, and he said that renewals were up and new members were up.
Well, there.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, I've been talking it up to everybody, I'll tell you. You know, I've been trying to help out here, do my fair share.
Now, we haven't had you on in a bit, so besides the fact from what people can gather from the name, do you want to explain the society just a little bit to our listeners who might be new?
Yes. We have the SPPA. We seldom say Society for the Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. is the oldest livestock breeds organization in North America. There were some other organizations before us, but we have stayed with it. And the other North American organizations like the ALBC and Rare Breeds Canada are all somewhat newer. Now, we will hit our 50th anniversary in 2017.
Mm-hmm. And so you collect knowledge about or collect rare species or old
rare
species
chickens.
Or
old breeds,
rare chickens?
Yes. We actually were originally set up to save the very old breeds, but initially nobody else was doing anything with poultry, so we became the champions of all rare chickens. But we certainly propagate information about the old breeds and other rare poultry, and we, of course, promote the keeping and rearing of those birds, talk about some of the benefits. I mean, depending on what you want to do with your poultry, in many cases, the old historic breeds are the best fit for a backyarder.
And so what are some of those historic breeds that, you know, that the society was originally started with?
Well, one of the old Western breeds is the Dorking. It dates back to the Roman era. We're not actually sure where it originated. The Romans wrote about it. A number of Roman writers praised it and so on. Today we call it an English breed because one of the places the Romans took it was England. But they're good mothers. They were traditionally considered one of the wonderful breeds for eating. They were a gourmet breed and still are. They're good winter layers and so on. Now, unless you want to buy an incubator, having a hen that will hatch her own young is very good, and most of the modern breeds don't do that so well. You may get good mothers from them, but you probably won't get very many. Where old breeds like the Orientals, the Dorkings, the Games go about 100% broody if handled properly.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. And then my favorites in there, the Golden Campine.
Right. Now, the Campine is a much newer breed, but it's still an old breed. Uh-huh. The Campines, of course, are closely related to and descended from the Fayumi of Egypt, which the Europeans knew as the old Turkish fowl, and in fact were just a slightly larger version of those until the late 18, early 1900s, when there was a sort of a fortunate mutation where a hen-feathered cock was born, and within 7 years, that was the norm. The cocks took the same pattern as the hens, and they're not quite henny-feathered, although they're often called henny-feathered or partially henny-feathered, in that the Campine cocks do not have the saddle and hackle feathers like a male that most male chickens do, although they do have tail feathers like a male, which henny games do not. But they're a wonderful old breed, a good layer, although they're a breed that has been selected to be non-broody, unlike the Dorkings that have been actually selected to be very broody.
Yeah, that's what mine do. They'll lay eggs, and they don't even bother with them anymore.
Right.
You know, and I noticed that.
You're on your own, kid.
Yeah, you're on your own. That's it.
Right.
Those Egyptian Fayumis, those are kind of interesting. Is that an ancient chicken? I assume it is.
Right? That's
yeah.
Another chicken that goes back thousands of years. And the Campine is pretty much a straight offshoot, although it was selected along slightly different lines in Europe. A little bigger, like the Fayumi, they lay very, very early. I've had Fayumis crowing at a month, and
wow.
I've had Campines crowing not much beyond that.
Yeah.
Where a Dorking, a Game, a Leghorn, a Rhode Island Red, they're going to start thinking about that at five and a half months.
Now, I noticed another one that I have out here is the black white-faced Spanish.
Yeah.
They're not broody at all. I mean, they lay their eggs and they're gone.
Right. They're another breed that has been selected over a very long time as an egg breed and to be non-broody. Now, a few hundred years ago, the white-faced black Spanish was just a morph that showed up very commonly in the Spanish laying population. But since then, they've been divided into the white-faced black Spanish. There are some other colors. There are white-faced Spanish and blue white-faced Spanish in Europe. But the Menorcas, the Andalusians, the Spanish all come from the same source, the old Castilian fowl. And they had characteristics that were found in that fowl. But the Dutch and the English largely turned them into separate breeds.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
Yeah, they are. Now, they will lay as well as a leghorn, and the Minorcas in particular have much larger eggs, but they're also larger chickens, so each egg costs a little more than a leghorn egg would cost.
Okay, and so, you know, if you want to be a backyard chicken person and you want to raise chickens for their eggs, you want to get one of these that are not broody, that are good layers, but right. Not necessarily interested in raising them up.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, but if you want to raise your own chickens, it's a good idea to have those that are broody, or at least have a flock of broody fowl, such as Dorkings or Games or Silkies, to hatch your other eggs also. And that's traditionally how it was done. Now, the modern incubator dates to the 19th century, but the Chinese, the Egyptians, some of the Middle Easterners have been making incubators essentially used good insulation and some combustion to maintain by carefully controlling it, to maintain a proper temperature. Egyptians have been using incubators for thousands of years, and so have the Chinese.
We are out of time for this segment. We will be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy.
Is your pet eating too fast? Well, we have the healthy solution. IQ is the perfect solution to help your cats and dogs lead a better life. With their new patented design, their bowl will make your dog and cat live a culinary experience by having them eat like nature intended. Having to play with their food not only reduces the chance that they have weight problems, but will also let them enjoy the chase, like they would in nature. Designed by a veterinarian technician, this bowl was acclaimed by veterinarians and behaviorists around the world and won Becker's Best in Show at the Global Pet Expo in 2012. Get one for your cats or dogs today at your local store or online at AIKIOU.com. That's AIKIOU.com.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. We are talking today with Craig Russell from the SPPA. I said it correctly once. I don't need to recite it again. And we are talking about some of the old, rare, or just old breeds of chickens that people might be interested in raising now. And I know the SPPA is interested in keeping these breeds around, keeping these birds around, and there are different birds for different purposes.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And I think people ought to really look into these before they buy chickens if they just want some backyard chickens, because I find them much more interesting than the regular chickens. They're fun to look at. Some of them are so beautiful, you know, like my golden campines and my black Spanish.
Absolutely. And some of them have
different
chicken. Now, you're saying their unique qualities, like what? Give me an example, besides being pretty. We know you're
okay, well, being pretty is important. Now, some of the chickens that I find handsome or interesting, many people are appalled by their looks, but chickens like the naked neck, sometimes called a Turkin or a Transylvanian naked neck, and we can go back beyond them to the Madagascar game or Malgache, which may actually be partially descended from a fifth jungle fowl that was found on Madagascar at one time, These are naked neck birds, which are kind of interesting. Now, the Transylvanian naked neck, or the true naked neck, even though it's a descendant of the Malgache, it's just a tough chicken. And even though it doesn't have nearly as many feathers as many chickens, it does well in cold weather. But like its relatives, the Orientals, the Malgache is better kept where you have either very good winter quarters or in the south. There are chickens that do very well in the north. The only APA-recognized Canadian-developed breed, the Chanticleer, is a chicken that can really take the cold. And interestingly enough, it has almost no comb. It's called a cushion comb, related to the walnut combs of the Malays and so on. But unlike those birds that can't take the cold, partially because it has almost no comb to freeze, it does very well in cold weather and was selected for that kind of life. So there are birds that do well in the north, birds that do well in the south, and a lot of birds that will fit in most areas where you keep chickens.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, going back to that Egyptian
Fayumi.
There was an interesting fact that I remember about that. They say that they can't get the chicken virus, chicken flu. You know. That's what I was reading.
I have not heard that, but that is interesting.
Yeah, they said they're resistant to. I'm looking at it here. It's a book called Pocket Full of Poultry.
Okay.
And the fascinating facts about them, and it just said that they are resistant to many viral and bacterial infections, possibly including the avian influenza. Yeah. That's what they said about that. And I thought, wow, isn't that interesting how that chicken has learned, maybe it's because it's so old. I don't know.
Well, it could be because it's a chicken that has been kept in large numbers and fairly crowded facilities for a long time. And it probably took the toughness to survive those conditions. Now, one thing that I think many people don't realize about the avian influenza is that, for instance, in Laos, which has almost no modern chicken facilities, there was an avian influenza outbreak, and less than 5% of the population of chickens was affected, where in a crowded facility like a modern layer house or cage layers or a broiler house where the chickens are standing shoulder to shoulder, it's going to affect almost 100% of the birds.
That's amazing, yeah.
So part of it is the way we raise them that makes it so dangerous. Traditionally, avian influenza was known, but not considered a big risk. But with modern conditions, it's certainly can be devastating.
Well, that's interesting. So then these other chickens, another one that I've been promising myself to get is my red caps.
Oh, yeah.
that's another interesting one, Karen, that I told you I always wanted to get the red caps.
Are they from and what's interesting about?
Well, they're from England, and they're an interesting mix of Dorkings, Hamburgs, and Games. The three fowl that a few hundred years ago were among the only chickens in Britain were combined to make the red cap. Now, they're in the English class today in the APA, but originally were in the Hamburg class, even though they're supposed to be larger than Hamburgs and red ear lobes instead of white, but very much Hamburg in type. But we do know there's red Dorking and black-breasted red Old English Game in them, as well as the Hamburgs.
Yeah, and they're still on the critical list here.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
They certainly look, I'm getting to be an old guy at 64, but I have seen the red caps. They were never common, but there used to be very good red caps, and today it's hard to find a good one. They've gotten smaller, because when people needed an outcross, they went to Hamburgs because they didn't want the fifth toe from the Dorking. They didn't want the single comb from the Game. And it has sort of hastened their decline. Now, there are a number of people, many of them SPPA members, who are working to restore just by breeding a lot and selecting, and some are using the Dorkings and the Games to get them back up in size. But mm-hmm. there are people actively working to preserve that chicken, which in the 19th century was one of our major egg breeds.
Right. Now, they're supposed to run about 6 pounds, right? The hens and the roosters. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Now, that's where they should be, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And usually they're a couple pounds lighter than that today. Although in the 60s, 1960s, there were many around that were just where they should be.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there any other favorite rare chickens that you have that you like? Or?
Well, I'm a Dorking guy. They're maybe my favorite breed, but I like all the Orientals, too. I've had Malays and Shamos, Sumatras, Cubaleas, which we got them from Cuba, but the original stock goes back to the Philippines. Although it's not in the APA standard, the Malgache or Madagascar game is usually grouped with them. And, of course, the Asil, which means pure blood. It's a very old Indian breed. Now, I was talking about how old the Dorkings are, and they are. They go back to the Roman period. But Asils and Malays can be taken back thousands of years before that. So,
and, gentlemen, we are running out of time for this segment. You knew I was going to say that just as we start getting in, but that's how radio works. Folks, we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Hey pet lovers, please listen up. I want to introduce to you Nature's Logic, the most natural full-line pet food ever made. And here's why. Nature's Logic is made with a variety of high-quality proteins, such as beef, chicken, lamb, and venison. You will never find any synthetic vitamins, minerals, or anything else synthetic in Nature's Logic. Only real nutritional foods, such as dried blueberries, apples, carrots, cranberries, spinach, and almonds. Foods loaded with natural vitamins and minerals, as made by nature, not a chemist. Nature's Logic is committed to providing the highest quality and safest nutrition for the furry members of your family. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit the Nature's Logic website at naturslogic.com and find a store near you. Nature's Logic can be found in many independent stores throughout Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming. So, do your pets a favor and start feeding them Nature's Logic and treat them to the very best. Nature's Logic is truly 100% natural, the way pet foods should be.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. You know, before I forget, I want to tell everyone, if you have any questions for Joe, for myself, for any of our guests, including, you know, Mike Owens, the pigeon guy, you can write them right there on the homepage if you go to allpaws, P-A-W-S, pet, PetTalk.com. There's a form right there on the homepage. If you scroll down, you can fill in as much as you want and write all the questions you want, and we'll direct them to the right person. Our producer, who you never hear, is very good at getting, you know, chicken questions to Joe and and pet questions to me and vet questions to the vets. Now, we have Craig Russell with the SPPA, and they were, you are just wanted to talk about, what is it, the malaise, Joe?
Yeah, malaise. They're supposed to be the largest breed of chicken in the world, right, Craig?
Well, tallest.
The tallest, yeah.
Not necessarily the heaviest, although some of the Malays and Shamos can be very heavy. They are an interesting chicken. Now, like the Old English games and Spanish games and so on, one of their original uses was fighting for sport, although in their area in Asia, it's very different from what it was done in Europe and in America, in that they fought them more like boxers than gladiators. What I object to about chicken fighting is tying the steel on them, which, they fight naturally, but it's kind of cruel to put that those knives on the spurs. But the Malays and Shamos, when I was in Thailand in 1975, I was in a bar where they were fighting the large Orientals, and it was very much like a boxing match. They would say, okay, this chicken has fought four times and he's won three. This chicken has fought eight times and he's won five. This is what they weigh. And everyone would lay their money down if they wanted to bet on it. But the birds were not, they could be hurt, but they were not usually killed in a fight. There was some altercations when, if you picked up your bird, the fight was over. Well, if the bettors thought you picked them up too soon, you might be in trouble.
Right, so but, the chicken might be fine, but you might pay the price.
Yeah. So tell me about the Malays. Can they get 3 feet tall?
I've seen birds 30 inches or more. I think maybe the largest male I've ever seen was about 32 inches. And interestingly enough, I was in Malaysia and Singapore, other places where they have quite a few of them. The Shamo, also known as the Thai game in Thailand, originally came from Thailand. We think of them as Japanese breed. They can also be big, but they're not quite as tall. But I've seen both Malays and Shamos that were very, very large. I've never seen one that was 3 feet. But I've certainly read of them. And you say you know someone south of you who's claimed, I would go look at them.
He says they came from Germany. He has German stock, and he says that's why his are large. And I've never seen them. But he also, now, I thought this was a lot of money. He wants $300 a piece for these things.
Well, I'd go look at them before I paid that. I spent my military career mostly in Germany. I was to a lot of poultry shows, and I never saw a three-foot Malay in Germany. Now, one way that theirs are different than ours, ours are bred to the color that they come in Asia primarily. Now, they come in a number of colors, but black-breasted red is the common color. But unlike a black-red game or a brown leghorn, the hens aren't stippled. They're sort of cinnamon-colored. The ones in Germany are the same pattern, but they've been selected to be wheaten, very light-colored. Now, there are a lot of red piles in Germany, too, but I was to a lot of poultry shows in Germany. I was, at that time, already well interested in chickens and wanting to get home to mine, but I never saw a three-foot bird in Germany. Now, there's a book, a very good book, on Orientals and game fowl in general by Horst Schmutte, who's a naturalized American from Germany, and he brought some very good German birds in back in the 70s, I use some of that stock to mix with my Henry Miller Malays, which had originally come from British Columbia. But I wanted the Outcross, but I preferred the American or Asian color. This is an old rustic fowl. The Wheaton color is very beautiful, but it's almost sissy to me on a bird that's been around for thousands of years. And at one point, I've probably made this in past shows, but the Malay, you can go to Angkor Wat in Cambodia, and there are pictures on the temple wall there that would pass as a standard illustration today. And, mm-hmm. and those pictures are believed to be about 4,000 years old. So this is a truly ancient fowl.
Wow. Yeah, I find those fascinating, but I just find the price outrageous. Now, wouldn't Dr. Everett, Charles Everett, he raises Malays, doesn't he?
He does. Mm-hmm. Probably a little cheaper than $300. he has the Malgache, he has Shamos. He raises a lot of the Aseals. Now, the Aseal, in my opinion, is maybe the gamest chicken in the world. The young males, they start fighting when they're still chicks. The females fight with strangers. I used to raise a lot of Aseals. I love them, but they're just high maintenance. You have to keep them separate, mostly breed them in pairs or maybe a male with a group of sisters or something. They're perhaps the gamest chicken in the world, and not as big as the Malays and Shamos, but very much the same type.
Mm-hmm. So not a chicken you'd want if you were planning on, you know, raising your chickens in a backyard space. You don't necessarily want chickens that are going to fight amongst each other.
Right. Aseals are fine for a backyard if you have cages for each pair or individual chicken, or you have just a couple, because they're very friendly with people generally, but they're not, they're a great show bird, and they are beautiful, but if you want an Oriental and you want any number of them, you'd be better off with Shamos and Malays, although these birds, they get large. Unless you eat them young, they get tough, although they make good stewing chickens. I've had Shamos and Malays that laid rather well, but generally they're not considered a good laying chicken.
Right.
The Malgaches from Madagascar that I was talking about, if you get 40 or 50 eggs out of one of those in a year, they're very much like their wild ancestors.
You know,
some of the Malays and Shamos aren't much better.
You know, gentlemen, we are running out of time for this week.
Oh.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Well, you're going to be back on very shortly here in another
okay.
2-3 weeks. Because, you know, there's a lot. I got a lot of questions for you.
Okay. Well, I'm here. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay.
And I'm sure our listeners have even more questions for him and questions for you too, Joe.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, maybe we can handle those questions when I'm back on.
Yes, we sure will. Because, boy, absolutely. I'll tell you, you've raised some of the rare ones.
Well, you know, folks, we need to end the show. We'll be back next week with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And in closing, we'd like to say, Joe, say it with me.
Okay. May the flock
be with you.